The conference is now being recorded.
Welcome to the first quarter financial year 2019 investor conference call for the NAOS Limited Investment Companies. Your host is Sebastian Evans, Managing Director and Chief Investment Officer of NAOS Asset Management Limited. Please go ahead, Sebastian.
Great. Thanks, Tammy, and thank you everyone for joining us. I'm joined by Ben Rundle, who's the Portfolio Manager for the NAC Fund. The ASX material has been lodged with the ASX this morning. I believe it was also emailed out this morning as well. So if you're not too sure what I'm referencing, then please go to the ASX or go to our website and the presentation material should be up there. I'll get straight into it for the sake of time. Slide three, I will just highlight, obviously, we did our yearly roadshow. So obviously some of this will be a little bit repetitive, so I'll try and skim through it as quickly as I can and focus more on the, I suppose, more up-to-date information for the first quarter of FY19. So obviously for people that don't know us, slide three, the NAOS investment mandate, I think this obviously just sets a little bit of a scene, but obviously two parts to our mandate. Mandate one is not to lose our investors' capital. We seek to protect investors' capital, but hopefully over the time, over the long term, grow a stream of fully franked dividends and obviously long-term capital growth as well above the relative benchmark index. That's why we're here and that's what we seek to do over a rolling five-year period. Obviously, part two to that is we really only focus on the emerging company space with Australian equities. So listed microcaps, small and mid-cap companies, only with an industrial focus. So we don't invest in resources, we don't invest in oil and gas, we don't invest in companies like gaming companies. We have quite a rigorous ESG screen as well, and we really only invest in companies that are profitable. On slide four, our investment beliefs. Many of you would have heard me say this till I'm probably blue in the face, but obviously it's very key for us, and this is really what we focus on day in, day out. So we're a value investor that look for our businesses to grow over the long term. We're very concentrated, so we have 9 to 11 positions in each fund generally. We are long-term investors, so as many would know in NCC, we haven't added a new investment now for 18 months. We really focus on performance as opposed to liquidity because we run a closed LIC. We don't obviously suffer from redemption risk. It allows us to invest in businesses that we believe are going to outperform over the longer term as opposed to just investing in liquid businesses that in our view may be riskier and have not as good a return profile. We don't follow the index. We don't have any index weights within the fund. We only focus on industrials. We have a very stringent ESG screen, so many and towards the end of this pack, you'll be able to see what we can and can't invest in. And we also are aligned with shareholders. So I don't own any shares outside of the three LICs. A lot of the money, I think 10 to 15% of the money across the NAOS funds is family and friends. So we are very much aligned with our shareholders, so obviously we enjoy it when the share price and dividends go up, but obviously we suffer just as much when the share price and falls and dividends fall, which thankfully dividends haven't fallen to date. Slide five just looks at the three LICs and how they are different, and as I stress, the investment process is the same across all three. The only thing that is different is the size of the businesses. So NCC, the average market cap in there is about 90 million. NSC, the average market cap is about 250, 220 to 250, and NAC is closer to a billion. So you can see they get larger as you move to the right. We don't invest in the top 50. We leave that to people like you because we don't believe we have a long-term competitive advantage investing in the top 50 stocks in Australia. Slide six really goes to what everyone wants to talk about, I'm sure. It's the most important part of the presentation for some. And that's obviously the performance for the first quarter of FY19. So look, in summary, pleasingly, it was a much better quarter across the board. All three funds outperformed the relative index. NCC was up by 4.34%. First, the benchmark was up 1.1. NSC was up 2.06. First, the benchmark up 1.1. And NAC was up 4.92 versus the new benchmark, which is the ASX 300 Industrials Accumulation Index, which is up 1.74%. So as I stressed going around Australia a few weeks ago, it was imperative for us to have a much stronger first quarter. And that really comes down to the fact that it's reporting season. Almost 90% of our investments report in the first quarter for the previous year, and pleasingly, many of them produce results that were either in line or ahead of, you know, market expectations, and subsequently, you've had an increased share price across many of our investments. So from our point of view, it was a solid investment, solid time for us as a group, and now I'll go into a little bit more detail in each respective fund and some of the investments within that. Slide 7, just obviously a quote, and it's all about margin of safety, and it's something that we do stress, is, you know, we invest, you know, as some people say, in boring, predictable businesses sometimes, but as I learnt in the GFC, they're businesses that we feel can really withstand any economic downturn and really get through the other side when, you know, the next recession does come along, and they have the ability to fund their growth internally, and they're not reliant on external factors such as equity markets and debt markets and things like that. And that's, the portfolio is really made up of businesses like that, which over the long term should outperform, but obviously, as I've said time and time again, in raging bull markets, they can significantly underperform. Slide 8 looks at the dividend profile for NCC. So this one is still a half-year dividend profile. Obviously, we just paid the FY18 dividends paid this week. And pleasingly, that dividend profile continues to grow now for 6 years. It'll be 6 years in February. Still has a solid reserves profile, and still has a reasonable franking profile. And as these businesses mature, or many of the investments, they now are starting to pay fully franked dividends, as opposed to, you know, 3 years ago, not many of them would have. Slide 9 just touches on a bit of a stock spotlight on what's happened in the past quarter, and to be honest, it was a flat out quarter for us, and as many of you will be aware, October, which I won't really speak to, has been just as busy, really. So COG, Consolidated Operations Group, had a very busy quarter. Obviously, they had their results. They updated guidance for 19 and 20. More importantly, in our view, though, they had three key announcements. And the first one, I'll go probably back to front here, but they announced a new director, and that director was the former CEO, and when I say CEO, it was CEO of over 10 years of Pepper Finance Group, which was an ASX-listed business, which was purchased by KKR for over $500 million last year. Very well-known individual, very experienced in the space, and we think it'll really bring a lot of credibility and, I suppose, you know, maturity and just general market understanding to the Consolidated Operations Group. So we look forward to him being appointed, obviously, at the AGM. They announced the acquisition of an interesting business which many would not have heard of, but Westlawn, which is a sort of like a mini bank based in Grafton. They have a $200 million debenture program run out of Grafton, which is a very sizable debenture program. We believe this will provide COG with a different funding platform, a more solid funding platform, and obviously hopefully better deal origination pipeline. And it's important to note that they didn't buy this business. They didn't buy shares. They actually injected more capital, so no one sold down. Then obviously they acquired a more of a vanilla broking business in New South Wales more recently, which is once again very highly regarded. And COG's very much on their way to hopefully getting to over 20% of, you know, the finance broking origination market, which would make them the largest by a significant margin. Enero, which has been in the fund now for over 5 years, you know, had really an excellent result. It was probably the strongest result from the group or out of all of our investments. Excellent cash flow generation, great client list now. They now work with Adobe globally. They work with McAfee Security Solutions globally. They work with Facebook in three countries. They work with Eaton, which is the largest utility business in Europe. They're really starting to hit their stride, and I think it's great for that team because it's taken them an awful long time to get there, but they've been patient and conservative, and now we're really starting to see the fruits from that. And obviously, they had their AGM last week, and it was pleasing to see that, you know, first quarter FY19 is on track and is basically a record for that business. Over the past 6 or 7 years of the first quarter trading, so it continues to go from strength to strength. Wingara provided guidance of at least $6 million EBITDA. It's obviously a small figure, but when you put it in perspective, they only made $1 million last year. So the Wingara result will be out in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Clearly, it's very topical with, obviously, the droughts, shortages of hay in certain states, and not others. And obviously the completion of that Ozco acquisition, which they did about 6 months ago. So really a big year for Wingaram. They really need to prove to the market they can not only put out a guidance figure, but they really need to show that they can deliver a clean set of results so the market can understand what they do and obviously what the financial metrics of that business are. Looking at the portfolio, not a lot has changed. So obviously 9 holdings, no cash, but when you look at our holdings, many of them do have cash weighting, so like they are net cash businesses. You can see the director shareholding and the average market cap still remains very pure and very focused on that micro or even nano cap space. Many of them pay a dividend yield. We expect many of them to grow, albeit some off a low base, and we believe we're paying a fair value for those companies of only 7x. So we're value investors. We expect these businesses to grow. And when you look at the net debt figure, you can understand what we mean by conservatively geared or not even geared at all. On to NSC, which is in the lime, I suppose it's lime green, if I'm allowed to call it that. So looking at dividends, obviously we're moving to a quarterly dividend profile, so I don't want everyone to panic when they see the third column there. You can, obviously that's one quarter, not one half. We announced that dividend, I believe, last week, and it goes X in a couple of weeks, is my understanding. Still have a reasonable reserve profile and franking profile for this business. And obviously the DRP will continue to buy shares on market. So hopefully that gives people more clarity and understanding of what we're trying to do to eliminate dilution, but obviously provide people with a steady stream of fully franked dividends. It was a very active period for the NSC portfolio, both good and bad. And once again, October's been hectic for this fund as well. Yeah, without a doubt, the clear negative within this fund was Chapara. The announcement of the Royal Commission into Aged Care completely caught us off guard. Scott Morrison came into a new government within 2 weeks of his appointment, announced Royal Commission to Aged Care to try and clean up the space. Obviously, in the short term, this probably provides a significant headwind because obviously there'll be probably many horror stories that come out from providers who haven't been doing the right thing, and that will affect sentiment for the industry in general. Sentiment leads to lower occupancy. Lower occupancy off a fixed cost base leads to much lower earnings. Pleasingly, we did sell some of the position prior to this announcement, but it wasn't enough to, mitigate the gains. But when you look at it, I suppose, from an attribution point of view, over the quarter, Japara cost us about 1.7%. From a portfolio point of view, so it's not terminal, but clearly not the position, not the result that we expected. Many people expect, well, what are you doing now? As I've told people, we will exit the position completely. Obviously, this is a little bit against the nails philosophy of taking a long-term view, because on a long-term view, we believe the aged care sector will come out much stronger and the listed players will come out much stronger, and it wouldn't surprise me to see consolidation occur over the next few months. When I think you look at the earnings risk and our ability and our need to really focus on our capital and providing strong shareholder returns, we felt we could deploy it in better investments. Not to say that we won't look at the aged care sector in 18 months' time when the Royal Commission has finally done its job and all the facts are on the table. Over the wire is probably the opposite occurrence, provided a stellar result. And by Stella, they delivered 20% organic revenue growth for 18, but for the first time in their history provided 20% organic revenue guidance for 19, which is the first time they've done that. You know, really just focusing on that model of being a one-stop shop for SMEs like NAOS and others, that if you want all your data network, cybersecurity, over the internet phone solutions, over the wire is your place, because they provide you with a solid customer service and a solid customer experience. And that's really showing in their results. As many of you would have seen, Over the Wire acquired 2 businesses last week, very complementary to their business. You know, they focus on adding new services and obviously expanding into new geographies. So one was obviously expanding into the South Australian market, and the other one really provided them with a new service around a specific type of data network capability. So we believe that business continues to go to strength and remains very much very much under the radar in regards to the ASX and people investing in that business, as it's really still only a $200 million business. On M&F, probably fits in between the two, provided finally acquired Innerbox Group. Innerbox Group has been listed for many, many years. Many people don't know it. Is a big competitor to one of M&S products called iBoss. We think this is a great strategic fit for software business. M&F can provide or can use that business on their network. I think the market was clearly disappointed that they didn't provide any synergies, and we believe it's very early in the day, but over time, when you look at M&F's track record of extracting synergies, it's excellent. So we think hopefully there'll be an update at the AGM. And they also provided 19 and FY20 guidance, which obviously the market was probably a little bit disappointed with, and albeit we were probably a bit disappointed with, but we believe this business continues to reinvest in the right places. And when you look at 19 to 20, it's still growing at over 25%. Clearly, M&S have a lot of work to do in regards to the way they communicate and message to the market, and they really need to prove that they can hit those 19 and 20 figures and provide the market with more clarity around the acquisition, the synergies, and the competitive offering. So hopefully we'll see some of that at the AGM. NSC, 12 holdings, a cash weighting of 6.4, but as I've said, if you include businesses like TOT, which is a cash box, the cash weighting would be closer to probably 17%. NSC directors continue to acquire shares. We bought another 500,000 shares in the quarter. The average market cap's 200 million, slightly higher yield, slightly lower growth compared to NCC, as you'd expect from some bigger businesses, and a slightly higher multiple, but I'm probably a more conservative debt profile compared to NCC. So overall, we feel very confident about them. They especially feel very confident about the businesses that are in that portfolio. They're real businesses, they're proven businesses, albeit when you deal in this space, we've come to learn that obviously management's ability to communicate with the market and have solid messaging and meet expectations can be a little bit hit and miss. And it does feel like we're going a bit one step forward, two steps back sometimes. But as I've said, you know, when you look at Over the Wire, that's a business that's made us an awful lot of money in a short period of time, but it's been completely offset by M&F Group when you thought M&F would be probably the safest investment within our whole portfolio.
Thanks for calling Taylor Collison, a leading financial services firm providing...
I don't know, is there an operator there? Yep, so I'll keep going. All right, that's all right. Seems all right. Yeah, so that's all right. So
just starting with the dividends, we recently announced a quarterly dividend of 1.35 cents. We did go to court. This is the first quarterly dividend that we have announced. We went to that move a recent time ago just to give investors a more regular stream of dividends. That dividend goes ex on the 5th of November and it's paid on the 19th of November. You can see there on the top left corner of that page, slide 14 I'm on, the profit reserves still allow for quite a few dividends into the future, and the fully franked yield at the moment is 5.2%. That quarterly dividend is obviously fully franked as well, which is our aim to continue to do that when paying dividends going forward. Just having a look at some of the stocks that contributed to the performance. So as Sebastian mentioned, for the quarter, NAC was up just under 5%. Hello World and ServiceStream were really the two key contributors to that performance. And I've put in there Reece as well, which is a recent addition to the portfolio. But starting with Hello World, reported a very strong set of results together with full-year FY19 guidance. Market reacted quite favourably to that, and the stock price had a decent move higher. We did lighten our position somewhat. Just on valuation grounds, the stock was getting to a level where we just felt like the margin of safety was a little bit diminished, so we took the opportunity to just slightly reweight the position downwards. But where we sit at the moment, we're pretty comfortable with how they're going. A lot of people have spoken to me about the Flight Centre announcement yesterday, Flight Centre obviously being a competitor to Hello World, and they announced an update yesterday, which is a little bit disappointing. I think the stock was off around 10%. Those issues with Flight Centre are quite transitory in nature. They seem to deal with a lot more internal parts of the Flight Centre business with regard to a new booking system that they've introduced. But importantly for Hello World, total transaction volume, which is the key driver of the earnings going forward, is still going the right way, and we're still very comfortable with the position. On top of that, there's still a few levers they can pull to reduce the cost base and a bit of extra growth into New Zealand as well. So very happy with how the company sits at the moment. We look forward to hearing another update from them at their AGM shortly. ServiceStream on the right-hand side of that slide. Business is going very well at the moment. They did a recent acquisition, which they provided an update on, which is going very well. And they're continuing to look at other complementary acquisitions to try and continue to diversify their revenue stream. But ServiceStream today, it's on an undemanding valuation. They have a very strong balance sheet with net cash of about $73 million. It's a very profitable business. They have free cash flow of about $75 million, and they pay a dividend as well. And on top of that, Lee, the CEO who runs that business, we think is excellent and really hasn't put a foot wrong. So business is certainly on track. We're very happy with the position, and it's good to show that it's been paying dividends for us. A recent introduction to the portfolio, I did speak about this at our recent roadshow, but Reece, which is the plumbing distribution business, they announced an acquisition in the US called Morsco, which we think is an exciting acquisition for the company. It has a similar level of revenue to what the current Reece business has, but it has an EBITDA margin of about 6%, which if you compare to the core Reece business EBITDA margin of about 14%, it's obviously our view that given the Reece management team and their track record, that they will be able to increase that going forward. We also think it diversifies them in terms of their exposure geographically. It's no secret that the housing market in Australia at the moment is some of the heat coming out of that market. So this acquisition just diversifies them away from that a little bit and provides a more stable revenue stream going forward. Most importantly, when they did the acquisition, they announced a capital raising, and the founders of Reece invested a further $360 million of their own money into that capital raising to help fund the acquisition. So that demonstrates to us a very strong shareholder alignment. The business has the share price has come off a little bit having a run post that acquisition. So we think it provides a pretty attractive entry point from where we sit. And they do have a very long track record of providing growth to their shareholders through various economic environments. Turning over to slide 16, just an overview of the portfolio. So still 12 holdings in there. Our cash weighting at the end of the quarter was a bit over 7%, which is actually quite high for the NAT portfolio. That was quite fortunate insofar as this market sell-off that we've seen in the last week or so, it has allowed us a little bit of ammunition to top up some of the positions that we think are oversold. So that cash weighting has reduced from the 7%. I think it's down to about 3% now. The director shareholdings, 7.5 million, and the average market cap, a little bit over $1 billion. Dividend yield at the moment of the portfolio, the underlying portfolio, is about 3.2%. And the financial metrics really haven't changed much from our recent update. We're projecting EBITDA growth for the underlying businesses of a little over 20%, and the valuation we're paying for that is about 9.5 times EV to EBITDA. And you can see the final point there that net debt of our companies is very, very low. So, to the extent that we do continue to have a sell-off, potentially there's opportunities for some of our companies to make acquisitions and take advantage of, a lower level of optimism in the market. So with that, I'll hand back to Sebastian, who can tidy up a bit of some of the market metrics we're seeing at the moment.
All right, thanks, Ben. And as you said, I'll just quickly touch on some market sort of events that we've seen over the past quarter and probably just give you a good feel of what we're looking for and how we see it playing out and some of the notable fund events over the next few months. Obviously, just slide 17, the single greatest edge an investor can have is a long-term orientation. I stress this an awful lot in a market that is more and more short-term focused every day. You know, businesses are built over many, many years and not over one or two quarters of earnings results. When you look at slide 18, valuation is obviously something that everyone talks about. And I think a good point, Ben obviously had a presentation last night with Howard Marks, and I think made the very good point that obviously the GFC, he made the point the GFC was one of the worst, if not the worst, market correction, I suppose, market event that he's seen in his lifetime. And I think it does paint a very good picture, because I've done the rounds a lot lately, and every time you see many investors in our funds, and without a doubt, I'd say 80%, 90% are bearish, which is interesting because market corrections generally don't happen when everyone's bearish, because we're all running from the same corner. And I think what's really driving that is valuation. So when you look at the industrial companies, excluding financials and listed property trusts, you know, the multiple is almost 21 times. It's probably down a little bit now with the latest market pullback. There's little growth. Dividend yields are pretty high, potentially unsustainably high, because payout ratios are probably a bit high. But the big difference for me is balance sheets are in excellent shape. Businesses are under-geared. They have plenty of cash, lots of flexibility, and they're not really in the position where they could be caught out. And I think that is the big difference in my view. But you do need to work very hard to find businesses, A, that are going to grow, and B, they're going to get multiple uplifts. And that's what we're trying to do. But it has been a little bit of a struggle to date. Something that's probably really played out more recently is some of the consumer weakness. You know, Michael Hill Jeweler downgraded last week. Stock was off 25%. You know, car sales have fallen off a cliff. You know, motorcycle sales, which as we have a holding in motorcycle holdings, is probably not too far behind. You know, new car sales data has been poor. As I said, motorcycle holdings also reported data whereby new bike sales are down 12. Harley Davidson bike sales were down 25 as they release a new bike later in the year. I think there was another downgrade this morning, WPP, which is the largest advertising business globally. They've obviously got their own internal issues. But it's just very much an element of the consumer being under a little bit of pressure. I noticed consumer confidence was up down 6%. And you definitely say that, you know, in my view, I'd say that's very much driven by the housing market in Sydney especially. And as I said in our roadshow, just the access to credit. We continually hear that people, no matter what they earn, what they do as a job, you know, the access to credit or mortgages is hard. It is much harder than what it was 4, 5, 6 months ago. And therefore, that means that people need to pull back on their spending because they don't have the same access to credit as they did, you know, 12 months ago. Some other notable events we've seen is probably some, you know, increase in M&A activity and some notable bids. You know, MYOB got a bid from KKR, so private equity is selling it to another private equity firm, and I would say no one saw that coming. Navitas, you know, another stock has been out of favour for, you know, almost years. In the education space, got a bid from BGH, another private equity firm, a new private equity firm. And then obviously the consolidation in the outdoor media space. So, you know, consolidation is ramping up. Generally means, you know, towards the end of the cycle is when M&A does pick up. But you're definitely seeing M&A is on the rise as these companies probably can't grow. And because they have better balance sheets, they can, you know, look to acquire businesses. Obviously, Worley Parsons, yesterday I noticed doubled the size of their business in an M&A transaction. It's one of the largest we've seen to date in the ASX. You know, I suppose from an external point of view, everyone talks about the normalisation of US interest rates. You know, everyone panics that rates are going up. But I think when you put it in perspective, it is a normalisation. You know, rates are, you know, potentially going back to where they should be. They're not going back to 8% and 9%. They're going back to 4s and 5s if they do get there. But in our view, they definitely will get there as the US economy remains at, you know, full employment. You know, what that means is obviously your ability to generate risk-adjusted returns, you need to analyse that and obviously command a higher return because your risk-free rate goes up. So obviously, when we invest in businesses, that's the first thing we think about. We want to invest in businesses that are sound, solid, and somewhat safe. An increased lending cost, as I mentioned before, that's very real, and more rigorous lending criteria, as I said. You know, it is very real in Australia, and our understanding is that it's not going to stop anytime soon, especially as the Royal Commission continues to release its findings. Looking forward to, you know, quarter 2019, and it's already started for us. Obviously, the M&F AGM is a big one. That's on the 30th of October. Enero have already had their AGM, and as I said, that pleasingly, that was probably the highlight so far this month. Wingara's results out will be in the next few weeks, a big event for the NCC portfolio. Smart Group, their results out for calendar year 18. Obviously, the market was spooked by the MD taking long service leave. It's our understanding, obviously speaking with the company and other people, that this is simply a business that he started many, many years ago, and it's about time that, as all of us would know, it's about time that he needed some long service leave and really just take a short break over what potentially may be a little bit of a quieter time going into Christmas. And the big one that everyone asks me about is BSA and an update on that HVAC business. So I noticed they're still yet to release their notice of AGM, but obviously AGM's generally held prior to the end of November, so that will be another big one for our funds. Just going through the last slide, so 23 I won't touch on, but obviously reinforces our idea of concentrating investing. Slide 24, looks at our investment process and obviously gives people an understanding of how we go from 2,800 stocks in the ASX to basically 50 to 80 in our investment universe. Slide 25 touches on our ESG screen and really allows people to gain an understanding of what we can't invest in, and these are true exclusions, not, you know, bending the rules. These are full exclusions. And then obviously what we look for our businesses to do, and I'd say that your governance is a big one. Shareholder numbers thankfully continue to grow over the past 3 months. And then obviously 27, 28 touches on our team, and obviously investor awareness and communication, which I'm sure many of you do like to stay in touch, and I'm sure some of you don't wish to stay in touch as frequently as you can, but they are the different ways you can stay in touch. Before I go to questions, obviously I've got one email question here, so before I jump on the phone, obviously from an investor in NSC, obviously providing some feedback in regards to the share price. Obviously, as I say, with all of our leaks, we are very cognizant of this. As I said previously, we acquired maybe another, I can't remember, 300,000 or 400,000 NSC shares last month. You know, obviously the share price obviously does come down because we paid out over, it'd almost be 6 cents in dividends, and obviously another dividend coming. But ultimately, as I've said, with NCC, it took us a couple of years to get that stock to NTA and into a premium. It's really, in our view, it's about an exercise of providing solid performance, which we need to continue to work on. A stream of fully franked dividends that can grow is also extremely important. Eliminating any dilution, which we've done with the DRP, and aligning ourselves with shareholders and communicating the message, and that's what we want to do. The most important thing is we feel very confident about the investments within the portfolio, and as that remains the case, then hopefully that should lead to much better long-term performance, which leads to a higher share price, albeit I don't have the crystal ball, just because me and my team thinks an investment is an adequate investment over a 3 or 5 year view doesn't necessarily equal a higher share price on a 6 month view. And so with that, I'll just ask Tammy if there are any questions on the line.